Blog Talk Radio.
The nation is going through the trauma of the George Zimmerman trial, which is a political prosecution. It's very interesting. It's not only political corruption, but judicial corruption, and with this Angela Corey and these prosecutors in the Florida state court system. And, of course, some notable personalities in the legal field, such as Alan Dershowitz, is calling for their disbarment. They're not the only ones. But in history today, among the early political corruptions that occurred was Albert Geary. Born in 1744, this is where we get the term gerrymandering. He was the guy who rearranged districts so his party and his candidates could get an unfair advantage in elections. And so we call manipulating the boundaries of a district for a candidate, we call it gerrymandering. Among the other operators, this one was financial, and born in this period, 1763, was John Jacob Astor. And, of course, his descendants married into English royalty, and Lady Astor. In fact, we have a audio clip of hers, and we'll play it just a little later. Guy who started the Federalist Party in Puerto Rico, which, incidentally, one of the things that come up in the Zimmerman, that didn't come up in the Zimmerman trial, is that he has Afro-Peruvian or African a great-grandfather or grandfather, and you look at him and you look at the pictures on this Blog Talk episode, you can see the evidence of Afro heritage, African heritage. And, of course, this was not brought up, and, of course, he was called a racist by people who are actually racist, who are actually more African heritage than he is. And they are the real racists, such as the Reverend, he's not even the Reverend, Al Sharpton, a.k.a. Who was involved in the Tawana Brawley media fraud. A great English musicologist, Sir Donald Toby, was also a composer, born on this day. And if you read Perry Mason or you watched the Perry Mason show, Earl Stanley Garner, the creator of Perry Mason, the detective and lawyer, was born on this day. And the great James Cagney. He was born in 1900, a Yankee Doodle Dandy. And, of course, you remember him, probably his most famous role besides Yankee Doodle Dandy was in White Heat, and where he was the one who first smashed a grapefruit in his girlfriend's face at the breakfast table. Another great Englishman who created dresses for the royal family, Hardy Ames, and he was also a clothier for men. Canadian who came here from Saskatchewan, who came here to contribute, Art Linkletter, born on this day. Great opera singer is Eleanor Staber, her birthday. And a great comedian, Phyllis Diller. And what a number she got, as you used to say. Another Canadian who came here to contribute, and his son, Kiefer, Donald Sutherland, if you remember him from MASH. That was his first big, really, break in American media. And Diane Carroll, great African heritage singer. Among the deaths today was an assassination in 1928. Always had these in Mexico, their presidents, General Alvaro Obregón. After the World War II in Yugoslavia, Tito won. There, Mikhailovic was on the wrong side, and he was tried and executed in 1946. Billie Holiday, the great black singer, who had a drug problem, was abused. She died on this day. The great baseball player, Ty Cobb, one of the first men entered in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And then a great animal, Modoc, the oldest living animal, 78 years old. Among the events today, in 1775, the first military hospital was set up. In 1861, Congress, during the American Civil War, at the beginning, authorized the issue of paper money. In 1862, the Lincoln administration authorized blacks could be used as laborers and needed somebody to do the work. 1867, those of us who remember Marathon Man and ever going to the dentist in Polydent, the first dental school was set up at Harvard University. And in 1898, the Spanish surrendered in Cuba. Now, Cuba was also the source. Any place in South America, slaves were brought in by both the Spanish and the Portuguese, and the slaves, the blacks, the Africans, married in to or had illegitimate children with the Blanco Spanish, and became mulattoes. And this was most prominent in Brazil, which is Portuguese, which half the population has African heritage. Venezuela, Colombia, Cuba, Puerto Rico. The only place that didn't have black slaves was Argentina and Chile, and we don't know about Uruguay. We do know about Peru, and we don't know about Paraguay. Of course, a lot of Nazis were there. Of course, Zimmerman is a German name. Also, in 1938, another male aviator, Douglas Corrigan, said he was flying from L.A. to New York or New York to L.A. Instead, he ended up in Ireland, and he got the title Wrong Way Corrigan. In 1945, there was the first of the Potsdam conferences with Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin, who conned everybody. In 1948, and this is one of the things about these Korean airliners, South Korean airliners, I should say. I don't think North Korea has passenger liners. The Korean Constitution was set up, and the two Koreas were on that continent after Japan was defeated, and Japan had ruled Korea for many, many years. And in 1961, the first of the Today shows was broadcast on NBC, and John Chancellor became the host. And this is very relevant. In 1962, the first of the major national health care for seniors, Medicare, was rejected in the Kennedy administration by the Congress at that time. Later, under LBJ, Medicare came in, and now we're faced with another national health program, which the Obamacare needs to be totally scrapped and revised. And what people really need is to be encouraged to go to community clinics, because you can't be going to the emergency room for a cough or a cold unless you have another emergency. This is one of the problems with this. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi, the political operative, said you've got to pass it in order to read it. You ever hear things so stupid? And in 1972, we had the first women who were enrolled as FBI agents and were trained at Quantico, which is also a Marine base. And in 1980, Ronald Reagan accepted the Republican nomination for president, and he was successful. And this is known as a day of mourning in Mexico for Benito Juarez, who was the great uncle of Raul Alamosón, who was a whistleblower here in San Francisco, and he was one of the military personnel, a young lawyer, who was drafted into MacArthur's army when the Japanese invaded the Philippines. And he escaped from Bataan Corregidor with his pregnant wife, and later he emigrated legally to the United States. And one of his daughters married a descendant, a relative of the late George Collette Marshall, the chief of staff of the United States Army during World War II, and later Secretary of State and promoter of the Marshall Plan for the economic recovery of a devastated Europe after World War II. And, of course, Alvaro Obregón, the other Mexican president who was assassinated. We keep hearing about Hillary Clinton being now it's more openly talked about that she's a lesbian. With her lover, this woman, Huma, whose brother is in the Muslim Brotherhood. But she's not the first lesbian to run for president. It was Virginia Woodhull, whose picture is on this blog talk episode. And also, she was involved with Marx and Engels, the communists, German communists, who frowned on homosexuality and lesbianism, and she was expelled. Now, she was the first lesbian president, a presidential candidate, so it wouldn't be Hillary Clinton. Now, also, during the Watergate hearings, we had the black from Texas, the black representative, Barbara Jordan, who was also a lesbian, and she was touted, along with Bayard Rustin, who was a homosexual, were touted as the candidates for the presidency. They didn't get anywhere with it. Now, one of the other things that are very interesting, we've had other infamous political criminal trials, and among them, especially in the South, Leo Frank was of Jewish heritage who came from New York to work in, I think, Georgia. And he had a factory, a clothing factory, that hired young white girls. And one of them was found raped and murdered. Because he was Jewish, the Ku Klux Klan jumped on him, and also because he was a Northerner. And he was railroaded in a political criminal trial and convicted. And while he was in jail, he was abducted and hanged. And the governor of Georgia, there's a famous TV document drama called The Death of Mary Fragan. That was the young girl. I think she was 14. And the governor of Georgia at that time, I think, tried to commute his sentence, but instead he was opposed by the Ku Klux Klan, and Leo Frank was, I think, hanged. Well, he was certainly killed by the mob. Then later we had the Scottsboro trials of these black itinerants who were in those days during the Depression, along with white kids who didn't have jobs, rode the rails, as they said, and it was a white girl who later claimed that she was raped by these boys, and it became the infamous Scottsboro trials. They were railroaded. They were defended by a lawyer of Jewish heritage from New York. And it was only recently that they were exonerated. It was a horrible, horrible trial. Blacks were always accused in these political criminal trials of raping or looking at white women. And the most notorious one, never came to trial, was Emmett Till, a boy from Chicago in the early 1950s, who was accused of looking the wrong way at a white woman in Mississippi. And he was abducted, tortured, and murdered. In San Francisco, there were three political criminal trials. One involved in the 30s of a longshoreman. This case went up when there were longshoreman riots here in San Francisco. The second one was that of a woman called Tokyo Rose de Aquino, who happened to, was of Japanese heritage, born in the United States, went to UCLA school, and got caught in Japan at the beginning after Pearl Harbor and couldn't get out because of passport problems. She and other women, an American and an Australian, were forced to do broadcasts to GIs, and she all she did was broadcast music and make little remarks. She never engaged in treason and encouraged Americans to drop their rifles and drop their guns and come over and surrender to the Japanese. Yet she was railroaded here in San Francisco in a similar manner as Stephen Neri, a United States 18-year-old sailor who was lured, drugged, and raped, and he fought back by an illegal from Argentina who happened to be connected to the San Francisco district attorney and had had previous sexual assaults on other young males and had hung out in a public toilet in a park where children played in San Jose, California. We'll get into these infamous criminal trials. And, of course, the George Zimmerman recent trial. And you have these blacks, Angela Corey and these others, making stupid remarks, calling George Zimmerman a racist, when, in fact, he defended a black kid who had been assaulted by a white kid who happened to be the son of a policeman. And he was calling for this kid to be arrested who had assaulted the black kid. He also had George Zimmerman's black great-grandfather or grandfather had black heritage, and his picture is on this Blog Talk episode. Now, we're doing more on the little-known history of the San Francisco International Airport. Not only the crashes that occurred there, but also the fact that Pat Patterson, interesting man, was born in Hawaii, didn't want to go. His mother left him in Hawaii and came to San Francisco. He worked as a cabin boy when he was about 14 on a ship to get to San Francisco, later went to work for Wells Fargo and then did auditing and went to work for Boeing. And later Boeing set up United Airlines and Pat Patterson, William Pat Patterson, became the president of United Airlines and operated out of San Francisco to the end of his life. And, of course, he knew George Christopher, the great mayor of San Francisco, who made San Francisco an international city, which it isn't right now. It's been going downhill because of the pedophiles, the pornographers, the vote fraud artists, the people who ripped off the housing and public assistance programs who've come here from other parts of the United States and other parts of the world. But anyway, the latest on our video e-magazines are up on Micus Veritas YouTube, AmiCusVeritas, and you can go to them. Also, we're, one of the issues that are not, has not been brought up in the so-called immigration reform, or what I call illegal alien, these people coming here to work, they're not coming here to become United States citizens, a lot of them, and they're only coming here because they can't find work that enough to support their families in the countries from which they have left. And they migrate also into Canada to work in the Canadian agriculture fields up there. But anyway, one of the issues is more and more of these people who don't have driver's licenses even in their home countries, and they don't have auto insurance, yet they are driving vehicles, they get into serious accidents and even kill people. And something needs to be done about this in any type of illegal alien and immigration reform, requiring these people that they will be punished if they do not qualify as drivers, take the driver's written and road test, and have insurance when they do drive. That we need to crack down on this because it's the Americans who have auto insurance and the American taxpayer who pays for police, fire, ambulance, hospital for victims, American victims, of these unlicensed illegal alien drivers. So this needs to be addressed. Now we're going to try to find the Lady Astor. Let's see if we can find her little interview here. I hadn't planned this, but we've got a few moments here. And let's see if we can, I think we've got her, when her famous comment when she got into it with Winston Churchill. She was the first woman to, she married an Astor, one of the Astors who had emigrated to England and became a lord. And this woman, she was an American, born in Virginia, and she married into the Astor family in England and was elected to the British House of Commons. And she had quite a tongue on her, and she used to get into it with Winston Churchill. And he got angry with her one day and said, "If I were married to you, I would take a cup of tea with poison." And she said, "No, I." And she said to you, "I would serve you a cup of tea with poison." And he said, "If I were your husband, I'd drink it." So they used to go at it all the time. And let me see if I have her, Lady Astor. If I don't, it's just one of those days. So, but we need to get away from all this. And also here in, we finally got this incompetent mayor, Kwan, a woman, another community activist, who is now recognized that the agitators who are coming into Oakland and damaging property are outsiders. One came from New York, a 22-year-old kid, one of these Saul Alinsky types, and a lot of people don't know, still don't know who Saul Alinsky really was, who he started to work for, and what he did in Chicago. Oh, here she is, Lady Astor. But anyway, Saul Alinsky went to the University of Chicago, which is on the south side of Chicago, and he allegedly ran drugs and prostitutes. He was involved in the starting formation of the SEIU, Union Service Employees International Union, which is, a lot of people see it as a communist leftist front. And, of course, they've been sending around agitators around the country to stir up, I won't use the S word, political agitation in places like Oakland and in San Francisco. And they've been really wrecking the American economy, and a couple of their people have gotten HUD condos, at least one, Chris Daly, who came here from Silver Spring, Maryland. But here's Lady Astor. I think this is fun. Let's just play this little clip.
"And whereas his bravery, charity, and
valor..." Oh, no, that's
both
not
him. "War and in peace..."
Wrong one.
"...have been a flame of..." "...and whereas his bravery, charity, and valor..."
We don't want that one. We want Lady Astor here. Oh, here we go. Oops.
"Her maiden speech was on the perils of alcohol, a brave move for an MP representing a gin manufacturing port. She later brought in a bill to prevent the sale of alcohol to under-18s.
"Weren't you a prohibitionist at one time?"
"Never. I was against having 8 public houses on one street. And that was all. I never was a prohibitionist, but I did believe in the control of drink, because I'd seen it, where a woman said to me at Plymouth, 'I can get my husband past 4 public houses, but I can't get him past 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. It was appalling.
She held her seat in 1923 and for the next 2 decades. Other women followed her to Westminster, although none of them made quite the same impression in the chamber. The Astors entertained on a grand scale at their many homes and mixed in a glittering crowd. But by the 1930s, their house parties were attracting unfavourable attention. At the time, the British Prime Minister, Neville Chamberlain, was pursuing a policy of appeasement towards Hitler, an approach which had wide support. Winston Churchill was one of the few to speak out against it. Reports started appearing in the press about an elite group intent on appeasement at any cost, meeting regularly at Clifden, the Astors' country home. This so-called Clifden set may have been a myth, but the stories tarnished Nancy Astor's image. When war did break out, she spent much time in Plymouth, which was devastated by the Blitz. But questions over her judgment remained. Her contributions in Parliament were missing their mark, and she was accused of criticising British troops, claims she denied. Nancy seemed to be losing her touch. Her husband sensed what she did not, and he decided she should stand down at the 1945 election.
"Well, there, it's my husband. He wants me to get out. It's not my idea. It's almost breaking my heart. I'd rather go down fighting than retire."
Given her career, some might have thought she would be among the first women to join the Lords when life peerages were first awarded in 1958, but she was not selected. she was awarded the freedom of the city of Plymouth in 1959. But to the end, she saw herself as something of an outsider. This large portrait depicting Nancy Astor's arrival at Westminster was presented to Parliament by her husband. The painting, measuring 12 feet by 8, was not well received. It was soon taken down and eventually found its way to Nancy's hometown, where it spent 21 years on a stairwell of the local newspaper office, the Danville Register and Bee. After lobbying by local historians, it is now on show on a more public stairwell in Danville City Hall. Parliament did accept this plaque from her family to mark her achievements. It now hangs close to Central Lobby. Nancy Astor, of course, had her own views on her legacy. At her memorial service, the former Bishop of Plymouth recalled her examining plans for rebuilding the city after the Second World War.
And she said, "I do hope they'll keep the city clean, morally and physically. When I die, I don't want any monuments, but I want litter bins scattered all over the city, marked in memory of Lady Astor. Keep the city clean."
Do you think, looking back, that women are as suited mentally to public life as men?
In many ways, I think they're more suited, because they're not so easily... They're not so easily flattered as men are.
That's an interesting comment, and any woman who runs for president could bring that up. We're going to end with politics and poker, which I don't know any women who play poker, but you never know.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got so much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fight, fight.
Me too.
Hit me with a kick.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
This is coming up, and so this is Peter Paul Verzola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, and also we've revised our blog, amicusveritas.net. So we'll be back Friday, and we'll hopefully have more interviews and archival material for this show. Good night.